Let me ask around among my colleagues. I'm not sure this has been set down in writing, but I'm sure they'll know who the players are. Find yourself a friend at the city. Talk to Tyrone if he's willing. In an ideal world, there should be no conflict of interest among these groups, but this is Philadelphia.
I know what you mean, I told him. We talked for a bit longer, and then we left the restaurant to go back to our respective jobs. I had a lot to think about, but I was still determined to do something about the problem, if I could. Chapter 13. By the time James picked me up after work on Thursday, 3 days after an unknown someone could have killed me, I had to acknowledge that I was still rattled. Oh, I was trying to put on a good front, going to work on time every day and looking busy, handing out variations on, oh, shucks, I'm just fine, thank you very much, to well-wishers, and pretending everything was normal. The reality was, I was not fine, and things were not normal. Only I didn't know what to do about it. Denial wasn't working, although I had no idea what the standard timetable for denial to take effect was. Should I try therapy? A long vacation on a beach with James. Speaking of James, he wasn't pushing me to do anything in particular. Part of me was happy with that. After all, I was a big girl and I could take care of myself. Another part of me was pissed. The little girl inside me was having a tantrum and crying for help that I didn't know how to ask for. What was I going to do? Just wait it out? How long would that take?
No.
James's voice interrupted my internal dialogue. What? I snapped, then backtracked. Sorry, I didn't mean to bite your head off.
Are you all right?
Yes, no, I don't know, take your pick.
Something wrong at work?
He asked carefully. No, work is fine. Work is the easy part. Except this whole mess has got me wondering if we've been seeing the world through rose-colored glasses for the past century or so. I turned to face him, as far as my seatbelt would allow. I was an English major, remember? I never took more than the intro art history class. I never did graduate work in business management or the theory of arts administration. I kind of backed into my current position, as you saw. Before that, I was writing impassioned, grammatically correct letters asking people for money, or grant proposals, either of which was certainly a better fit with my skills. But things happened so fast and so oddly that I never had time to think through what I was doing or wanted to do with the position. Breathe, Nell, breathe.
And now something has changed?
James asked. Yes, maybe. Look, don't get me wrong. I love this society and its collections. It's a privilege to have access to them up close and personal, and it's also a privilege to make them available to the public, all the while preserving them. That works for me. But there's never enough money to do it right, and frankly, there's no way to change that, unless some multi-trillionaire shows up and gives us a blank check. We make tough decisions all the time. Can we do that? Should we not do that, or put it off for another year or decade? And I'm supposed to be guiding that process.
You're not alone in this. What about the board?
What about them? I replied. Nice people, mostly older men, who think that at this point in their lives they should give something back to the city or the cultural community. I applaud that, but for the most part, we meet a handful of times a year. I send them a stack of documents an inch thick before each meeting, reports, proposals, statistics, and half of them don't even read those documents. Some of them have their own agendas or their own pet projects, and will make a case for those rather than looking at the bigger picture. I understand all that. It's typical of our kind of institution.
But
who is the society responsible to? The board? The self-selected membership? Researchers? Or the general public, who sees very little of any of what we have to offer? James didn't reply immediately, and I had run out of steam. Finally, he said,
Now, you've been through a traumatic experience, maybe even a life-altering one, but you can't fix everything, and certainly not overnight.
You're saying I shouldn't try?
Of course you should try. But give yourself a little time. And think through what you can do under the circumstances, reality being what it is.
I knew he was right, but I was impatient. You've been shot at, right? And I know all too well that you've been stabbed. Did any of that change you?
Over time, yes. I carry a weapon at all times, as you know. I seldom draw that weapon. And when I do, I don't do it lightly. nor to my colleagues, I hope. I appreciate the value of life, my own and other people's. My work is to keep the world, or my small corner of it, safer and more honest, I guess you'd say. What's yours?
I didn't answer quickly, because his question deserved a serious answer. To keep history alive? To help other people see the past and how it is part of their lives now and why it matters. James nodded.
And that's a worthy goal. Do you want to stop doing that?
No, not really. But I guess after seeing North Philly, I feel like we've been polishing up and showing off only the pretty stuff, not the whole package.
Let me ask you this. Who's going to pay the entrance fee to look at slums, abandoned factories, the history of gangs?
I slumped back in my seat. Well, that's the problem. We give people what they want to see, or we give them what we as administrators have been indoctrinated to believe is what they should see. But there's so much more out there.
If it means that much to you, no, then come up with a plan. Figure out how to sell the idea to your board, even if it takes adding a bit of sugar to make them swallow it.
I said. Then I started to think. In so many parts of Philadelphia, the past had been a whole lot nicer than the present. But there weren't many people around now who remembered that. It might be tricky to present that particular past in a way that didn't underscore how badly things had gone wrong since, or paint the current situation as hopeless. It couldn't be. The city and its citizens couldn't just put a torch to it all and walk away. There had to be a solution, or at least one to work toward. And we at the Society had ammunition, if we chose to use it. I reached out and laid a hand on James's arm. Thank you.
Anytime.
By the time we got home, I was calmer. Listen, can we do something tonight that doesn't involve thinking? Like play Scrabble or watch a silly movie? No more earth-shattering concepts?
Of course. You want to go out to eat?
Not really. I think decent food would be wasted on me right now. And I don't want to get drunk. I just want to unwind and let my subconscious do the dirty work for me.
I might have some ideas,
James said dryly. I'll bet you do. I smiled at him. We followed my own prescription to the letter. We threw together a random meal and watched something that made us both laugh, and then went upstairs and found other equally satisfying things to do. Then I treated myself to a long bubble bath in our deep clawfoot tub, feeling relaxed and content. I couldn't change the world, but I could change a little piece of it. It might take some time, but then again, it might work eventually, with patience and persistence, and it was definitely worth trying. The next morning I awoke feeling refreshed and focused, a pleasant change. James was already downstairs in the kitchen, so I stretched and plumped my pillows and tried to organize my day in my head. I had no plan yet, but I had a plan for a plan. I wanted to call my staff together and see what they'd found out about Philadelphia neighborhoods and what we, as a collecting institution, could do to present them in a reasonably favorable light. I knew the employees had widely varied backgrounds and interests, not to mention access to different parts of the collections, so I would be interested to see what they came up with. I wouldn't worry about seeking donors or outside support until I had an idea firmly in hand, and there was no deadline. If the city's neighborhoods had been crumbling for more than half a century, then a couple more weeks wouldn't make a lot of difference. Charisse's death was still a dark spot in my mind. Since I hadn't heard anything from Detective Hrivenak, I assumed there was nothing new. Maybe there never would be. Or maybe I could go over to Charisse's office and poke a stick into a few holes and see what crawled out, what people said about her. Had she had any enemies at work? Outside of work? Obviously, I knew nothing about her personal life. Would her colleagues? Who do you think you are, Nell? Nancy Drew? That annoying, responsible, grown-up voice inside said. I listened, but I knew I had a legitimate reason to visit the licenses and inspections offices, even if I wasn't going to go through channels and wait 3 months for an appointment. The Society still owned a property in North Philadelphia. I had every right to ask about that property, its current status, and how to resolve its ownership going forward. I got out of bed, dressed quickly, and went down the back stairs, to find James ready for work, lacking only his jacket and his weapon, as he sipped coffee and scanned the headlines of the Inquirer. He looked up when I entered the kitchen.
"You're looking better,"
he said. "I feel better, sir. Your ministrations are very therapeutic. Thank you. Is there more of that?" I nodded toward his cup.
"Of course, and you're welcome. Anything on your plate for today?"
"The usual."
"A word from the detective?"
"Nope. Even if she can keep her foot wedged in the door to keep this case open, I'm sure her higher-ups want her to give it low priority. What will be, will be."
"A sensible approach."
"I thought so," I said cheerily, and helped myself to coffee. Eric beat me to work, so as soon as I had greeted him, I said, "Can you send out a quick email and ask everyone to meet me in the downstairs boardroom? Nothing urgent. Don't let them think there's a crisis. But I wanted to throw out an idea and see what people think. Say, 9:15?
"Should I plan to be there, too?"
Eric asked. "Of course. You're a relative newcomer, both to the society and to the city, and because of that, your perspective might be helpful. I promise I'll keep it short. Why don't I go get myself some coffee while you do that?"
"Yes, ma'am,"
Eric said, and turned to his keyboard. No sooner had I sat down at my desk with my coffee than Marty Terwilliger appeared and sat down. Ah, sweet normality. "Good morning to you," I greeted her. "I haven't seen much of you since Wednesday." "I want to talk about the Oliver place," Marty said. "So do I. Look, I've called an impromptu all-hands staff meeting in about 15 minutes, and actually, that property might fit into the discussion. You can come along and explain what's going on there?"
"Okay," Marty said cautiously. "You seem awfully upbeat this morning. Happy pills?"
"No, nothing like that. I guess I'm coming to terms with what happened earlier this week, and now I'm trying to find a way to use it for good. If someone is going to shoot at me, I want it to mean something, and this was kind of a wake-up call." "You aren't planning to quit or anything?" Marty asked, looking anxious.
"Nope, I'm planning to dig in. You'll see."
Marty and I were downstairs waiting when the staff trickled in shortly after 9. They looked uniformly bewildered at being there on such short notice for the second time in a week. I smiled at them all, trying to put them at ease. When most people had arrived, I figured I should get started. "Good morning, everyone. Before you panic, there's no bad news. First, I wanted to thank you all for being so supportive this week. I guess I was more upset than I wanted to admit, and you helped me keep it together. I have to say, the whole thing has given me a new perspective on how the society should operate, and I want to enlist you to help."
"Didn't we already talk about this on Tuesday?"
Ben asked.
"We haven't had a lot of time to hunt up anything."
"Yes, we did, Ben, but I'm hoping to focus our efforts so we don't waste time and energy. And there's another project that Marty described to me after I talked with you that sheds a different light on it." In as few words as possible, I reviewed my epiphany about the dead or dying neighborhoods of Philadelphia. Why Tyrone and Charisse had asked me to come with them. What I'd seen, and why I thought the society had some sort of responsibility to do what we could to help things change. After I'd finished my summary, I said, "I know some of you haven't been here very long, and I'm sure you're all aware how hard it is to change the direction of a venerable institution like ours, kind of like turning the Titanic." A few people laughed at my attempt at a joke, so I pressed on. As I said, Marty brought to my attention a different project, the acquisition and maintenance of a colonial estate outside the city limits. We visited there on Wednesday, and I'll admit it's beautiful and in surprisingly good condition, and it's exactly the kind of opportunity our traditional members and supporters would expect us to pursue. But is it the right thing to do?
Shelby spoke up. "Now, I'm not sure I follow. What's your point?"
I surveyed my staff. Some of the people around the table I'd worked with for a decade now. They were all here because they cared about history. They probably could be making more money somewhere else. They were smart and hard-working, and I wanted them to see what I was seeing now, after Monday's events had ripped the blinders from my eyes. "Look, everyone, I've just started thinking about this, so there's nothing like a plan in place. Even the board doesn't know about it, except for Marty here. I'm laying this out for you now because I want to know what you think. If you tell me I'm way off course, I'll accept that. I need your help and cooperation to make either idea work." LaToya spoke for the first time.
Let me see if I have this right. You're saying we have a choice right now. Either we direct our resources toward this Save the Neighborhoods concept or toward the Save the Mansion idea? I assume we don't have the capability to do both. I think that's what it comes down to, LaToya. Both are deserving projects, no question. I don't have facts and figures about what either would require, but I think what matters right now is what we as a staff think we should be doing. We talk and write about preserving history, but which history? The long and ongoing evolution of one of the nation's great cities, even when it includes slums and crime and decay, or the maintenance of a beautiful and demonstrably historic home of a single rich family at a particular point in the past, which is more important? Which fits the society's mission better? My passionate speech was greeted with silence. I wasn't surprised. It had taken me days to arrive at my current viewpoint, and I couldn't expect staff members to have an immediate response. I smiled at them. I'm sorry that I dumped all this on you all at once. It's been a hard week for me, and I'm looking at things differently now, and I think it's important to share it with you. We don't need to make any decisions right now. There's no timetable or agenda, and I haven't promised anything to anyone. But I want us all to think about what I've said. Talk about it with each other. What is it we believe the society is and should be? That's a pretty fundamental question, but one we need to look at. LaToya spoke again. How will the board react? I turned to her. Do either of these ideas? A fair question, and I have no idea. I don't want to take this to them until there's some sort of plan or proposal. I could use the excuse that it's too late to include it in next week's meeting agenda, but I'd like them to start thinking about these things, too. I may give them a verbal summary, like I've just given you. Hey, if neither one works out, no harm, no foul, but it seems to me that these two projects both reflect our institutional mission and how we see history. I welcome your input. That's all I've got for now. Thank you for listening. Everyone stood, looking uncertain. Some wandered out. Shelby came over and said, Hey, you don't mess around. Think I scared them all? Well, maybe the ones who like to get up in the morning and go to a safe, predictable job. But I, for one, think you're right. It's something we as an organization need to think about now and then. Maybe we'll all go back to sleep for another century, but at least you tried. Let me know when I have to rewrite all my boilerplate letters, will you? Of course, Shelby, I said. And she left as well. Marty and I were left alone. You sure you know what you're doing now? She asked. Nope, but I feel like I have to try. Then I'll back you. Don't say anything to the board just yet. I might have some ideas. You always do. So let's get to work. Chapter 14 Marty, too, disappeared to do whatever it was she did. I patted myself on the back. I had started one ball rolling, or one hair running, or something. I had faith in my staff. They were a smart, creative bunch, and I was sure they would come up with some new ideas. I was pondering what to do next when I realized LaToya was standing in the doorway. A moment, Nell? She asked. Sure. Is this about what I said at the meeting? Please sit down. I was a bit puzzled. LaToya seldom came to me, and our relationship was cordial at best. Maybe I'd struck a chord, or was she going to tell me I was crazy? She sat. I sensed she was choosing her words carefully. Aren't you suggesting a rather political problem to take on? You mean external politics, in the case of the Neighborhoods Project? Yes, and no. Yes, in that any meaningful change to the underlying problems will have to come from city government, maybe even with federal funding, and definitely with the help of community-based organizations, and certainly all those are political. What I see the society doing is assembling the documentation, artifacts, images, or whatever we have here for each target neighborhood, and making those resources available to whoever we believe will do the most good. I see that as a part of our mission, one aspect that we've kind of neglected. Maybe I was treading on risky ground. After all, I could easily be labeled a suburban bleeding heart liberal, and maybe I had no right to try to push the society in my direction. I really wasn't sure where LaToya stood. I knew her academic interests were directed to the Pennsylvania Abolition Society, whose papers resided in the society's collections. In fact, when LaToya had first been hired,
She had negotiated a 4-day week to allow her to pursue her own research using those documents. But I had no idea whether her current participation was more active than that, and I had never asked. I waited to see what she'd say. She tilted her head at me. "We've never really talked about personal issues, have we? I know only what staff gossip tells me about your home life, and I have no clue what your political or religious orientation might be. I believe you're a fair and honest person, and a reasonably good administrator, but up to this point you've never really stepped up and articulated the philosophy for this place that you're responsible for." I was careful in my answer. "I think that's a fair assessment, and I don't know much more about you on a personal level. Look, this week I've had a wake-up call. I'm still processing it, but what came through to me loud and clear is that we've been ignoring a large chunk of history, and that doesn't seem right. Because that history, at least for the city, nearly cost me my life this week. Okay, maybe that's melodramatic, but being shot at in a slum I'd never even seen, no more than a mile from here, got me thinking. I was shocked at how much I didn't know about the city, and that's my own fault. Do I think I can change the course of this place? Hardly. But I want to try. Do you have an opinion? Because I'll listen." "Because I'm black?" she said, then retreated quickly. "Sorry, that was uncalled for. You've never shown any discrimination toward anyone. But you have to admit it is a factor in Philadelphia and its history." "Of course it is, and the society should acknowledge that. You can certainly make a contribution because you probably know more about the relevant records than anyone else in this building, if you're interested." She looked at me squarely. "That's something I have to think about, Nell. I like my job. I also like keeping my research separate from my job, even though they both take place in this building. I'm not sure I want to upset that balance, but having said that, I'm not sure I feel that way only because I don't like change. So, like you, I want time to think." "Fair enough. But if we move forward on this, I would value your help. Thank you, Nell." As she stood up to leave, I added quickly, "One more thing, Tyrone. I don't mean to tread on your personal life, but can you tell me if he's an honest man? A good man?" LaToya wavered. "I can't say that I know the man he's become. But he was always very committed to what he believed in, and he wanted to do good. I think one of the things that drove us apart was the intensity of his commitment. I was always more restrained, more rational. But even now I wouldn't believe that he is involved in anything suspect. Is that what you want to know?" "I think so. I don't know him well, but I had the same impression. Thank you." I watched her leave, but I stayed in my chair. Was I going off the rails? Had the shooting completely upset my equilibrium? And worse, clouded my professional judgment? At least I'd reached out for opinions from my colleagues. If I was wrong, they'd rein me in, I hoped. Now what? It occurred to me that a visit to Charisse's city department might give me some more insight into the problem with the property and into Charisse's character. I had some legitimate questions. Charisse had come to see me about the society's property. I wanted to know how she'd come across it and what we could or should do about it from the city's perspective. Then I could compare that to our lawyer's opinion. They couldn't turn me away, could they? After all, I had seen Charisse die. That should give me some leverage. And it seemed highly unlikely that licenses and inspections had sent a hitman to take us out, all over one pathetic building. So I would go take on City Hall, or, more specifically, the Municipal Services Building, where all the business actually got done. I went back to my office and gathered my things for the short trek over to the Municipal Services Building, more often known as the MSB. I had looked up the pertinent information, so I knew where I was headed once I was in the building. Whether they'd let me pass the desk was another question. I was hoping that the name Charisse Chapman would get me in. Maybe I was on a fool's errand, but I was still too wired to sit in my office and do paperwork. "Eric, I'm going over to the city offices to see if I can find out anything about our North Philadelphia property. I should be back in time for lunch."
"Duly noted, Nell. Nice day for a walk."
"That it is." I set off, armed with no more than the address of our orphaned property.
My strategy was minimal, mention Charisse, talk to anyone who had worked with her, and as a distant third, see what the status of the property was in the queue. It wouldn't surprise me if whoever was in the office refused to jump me to the head of the line, and I wouldn't blame them. On the other hand, I was something of a public figure myself, and I wasn't there to complain about something, which probably put me in the minority. The walk took no more than 10 minutes. Bless James for his solicitude, but I kind of liked walking from the train station to work, and I was pretty sure I needed the exercise. The MSB stood on the far side of City Hall, a tall, gray, rectilinear building that was all windows. Shaped like dominoes, its only distinguishing feature was the large gold eagle over the entrance. I went under the eagle and found myself in front of a large reception desk. Everyone was so security-minded these days, but better safe than sorry, especially when a government was involved. "Excuse me," I said to the man in uniform behind the console. "I need to speak to someone in licenses and inspections about Charisse Chapman."
"She's, no longer with the department,"
he said, looking uncomfortable. "Yes, I'm quite aware of that, since I was with her when it happened. I only wanted to talk to someone about something she was working on for me," which was actually true. The man gave me a once-over and decided I was not threatening.
11th floor, sign in, please, and I'll need to look in your purse."
I signed while he riffled through my bag to make sure I had no weapons or explosive devices. Then he handed it back to me and waved me toward the elevators. On the way to the 11th floor, I tried to remember whether I'd been in this building before. I had some vague memory of a meeting about city grant applications, although I couldn't remember what department had been involved. In any case, it had been years earlier. When the doors opened, I glanced around. While the exterior of the building presented a brave face to the public, the interior working offices looked like any other office space. Messy. There was a department name on the glass door, but beyond that stretched half a floor's worth of battered old desks, filing cabinets, and banker's boxes. There were people behind most of the desks, and many of them were women. I stood wavering in the doorway until someone finally noticed me and called out, "Can I help you?" I took that as an invitation to move farther into the room. Up close, she looked closer to 30 than 20, and she hadn't bothered with makeup. Her clothes were best described as business nondescript. "I hope so," I told her, smiling. "I wanted to ask about something that Charisse Chapman was working on." The woman's face fell.
"Oh, well, she's not here anymore."
"I'm afraid I know that," I said. "I'm Nell Pratt." The woman's eyes widened.
"Oh, right, you're the one. How terrible for you, and what a shame. Nobody's touched her stuff yet. Well, maybe there was a policeman here who took anything personal. Not that there was much. She wasn't into pictures and souvenirs. Oh, please sit down. Can I get you some coffee or anything?"
"Coffee would be good. Is there some place we could sit that isn't such a goldfish bowl?"
"Oh, right, sure. There's a table in the break room. Follow me."
I followed her around a corner and down a windowless hall until she turned into a dingy room with a table and a couple of plastic chairs. A counter with a sink in the middle held coffee supplies, and there was a small refrigerator that I assume was intended for employee lunches.
"Sit, please."
She waved vaguely at the table. I sat. "I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name."
"Oh, sorry again. I'm just so flustered. I'm Melanie Saggiano. I hadn't known Charisse for long, and then boom, she was gone. Black or creamer, it's the powdered stuff."
"Black is fine." I waited until she had managed to put together a cup of coffee and set it in front of me, along with some sugar packets and a plastic stirrer.
"Thank you. Is there something I can help you with?"
"Well, I'm not sure where to start. You see, Charisse and Tyrone Blakeney came to see me on Monday because of a property that the Pennsylvania Antiquarian Society apparently owns, although we thought we'd sold it decades ago. We went out together to see the place, and you know what happened after that. But I spent only a couple of hours with Charisse, and we never even discussed how she identified the ownership or what we need to do now. Maybe you can help me?"
"Well, I can tell you about the program, but I'd have to track down the file for any other details."
"That's all right. Anything you can give me would be a plus." I sipped the bad coffee and tried to look expectant. Are you aware of the vacant property strategy?
When I looked blank, Melanie hurried on.
Of course you're not. I don't know why you would be. Well, about 5 years ago, the city created a new initiative within our department, with the goal of doing something about the vacant properties around the city. It's been working well. We've managed to inspect nearly half of them, and we're trying to force the owners to register them as vacant, which means they acknowledge responsibility for them, for the record, or sell them, or rehabilitate them. We've managed to work with the courts, so we have some leverage. The owners can no longer just ignore us, and that's been pretty successful, too. The department has brought in more than $600,000 in licenses and permits in just the last year.
So what was Charisse doing?
She was hired a year or two ago when the department staffed up to handle the initiative. She was really into it, almost like it was a crusade, not just a day job. That's probably how she found your property.
So why did she come to see me, rather than just sending a notice of some sort? Did she do that with everyone she tracked down?
No. Wait, Tyrone was with her, right? They were working together. He's part of some kind of neighborhood group in North Philly, and that's the area she was focusing on most recently. I gather he's got some big plans, and I think she was trying to help him with the paperwork so he could consolidate some of the abandoned properties, make the neighborhood more appealing to potential developers.
That seems logical. I feel so guilty. Maybe that doesn't make sense, but if someone hadn't messed up the paperwork long ago, we wouldn't have been there on Monday.
It's not your fault, Melanie hurried to reassure me.
I know, but still, I feel bad. What was she like? Melanie once again looked uncomfortable, if only briefly.
She was a hard worker, always in early and stayed late.
No husband or kids waiting at home for her?
No, although I think she was seeing someone. Anyway, she was real careful with her paperwork. She made sure it was correct, and she turned it in quickly, which is not always true around here.
Was she from here? Did she have family in the city?
Melanie shrugged. I don't really know. Charisse wasn't a group kind of person, if you know what I mean. She was nice, and she said hi and stuff, but she didn't hang out with anyone in particular. She didn't buddy up to anyone here, not even our boss. She wasn't a suck-up. Mostly, she kept to herself. It was hard to complain about her because she was doing a really good job.
I nodded. When we were together in that neighborhood, she seemed really committed to what she and Tyrone were doing. I don't know anything about him either. Has he worked with a lot of people in this department?
Not me, but I know he's been working hard on clearing the titles to a lot of these properties so he can move forward.
He's not an investor, is he?
Melanie shook her head. No, and he's not working with the big developers either. I think he just really cares about that neighborhood. He's a lot better with people than Charisse was. Maybe that's why they made a good team. Sorry, that's really about all I know.
I appreciate your telling me. Now, what do I need to do with the property we apparently still own?
Why don't I take a look at Charisse's desk and see if she left anything about it?
That would be really helpful, I told her as I followed her out into the big room. Melanie headed for a desk that looked like a fish out of water in the room. While there were still files and documents stacked up, they were all carefully labeled and aligned and sorted into categories in a tiered rack. There was a single container with pens and pencils, and a middle-aged phone, not much else on the desk.
"What did you say the address was?"
Melanie asked. I told her, and she riffled through one of the stacks from the middle of the rack, presumably the pending category.
"Oh, yeah, here it is. I can't let it leave the building, but I can make copies for you. You got a lawyer?"
Of course, but as president, I like to keep on top of things, and our lawyer charges by the hour, so the more I can take care of, the more money we'll save.
I hear you. I'll just be a minute.
Melanie grabbed up the file and headed for a copy machine on the other side of the room. I looked around the room, trying to match the number of people working, and they all looked busy, with the tens of thousands of properties that needed attention. It was still mind-boggling to me. What a terrible waste that someone like Charisse, who was eager and committed, should be wiped out for no reason, when she was only doing her job. Not that I'd learned anything more about Charisse with this visit. Quiet, competent, kept to herself. Nothing here to guide me. I knew I hadn't been the target. Had she? Or had Tyrone? Or no one at all?
Melanie returned with a neat stack of photocopies. Here you go. Thanks for stopping by. We don't see many of the owners here.
Mostly they want to disappear and we have to hunt for them.
Thank you for your information. I'll try to get this sorted out quickly and take at least one file off your stack. Oh, let me know if there's any kind of service for Charisse, will you? I'd like to at least acknowledge her.
Sure, you have a card?
I handed her my business card, and she said,
Thanks, I'll be in touch if I hear anything.
I exited the building, smiling at the guard at the desk, and walked out into the plaza in front. What now? I had no idea. Chapter 15.
Still a nice day. I strolled across City Hall Plaza, taking my time. The City Hall building itself was amazing. William Penn had set the open space in the middle of what would become a major city. He had called it Center Square. I was sure he had never envisioned this massive wedding cake of a building plunked down right in the center of it. One of the largest municipal buildings in the world, tallest masonry building, supporting walls 22 feet thick. It was roughly the same age as the Society building, although they bore no resemblance to each other. I'd been walking past it for years, and it still never failed to impress me. I picked up a sandwich on the way back, carefully avoiding thinking about what to do next. Luckily, when I returned to the Society, the answer provided itself, in the form of Detective Horifinac. She did not look happy, but then she seldom did.
Were you looking for me, Detective?
No, I'm here to look up the history of the Horifinacs, she all but snarled. Of course I'm here to see you. Got a minute?
Sure. Upstairs?
Now that room in the corner will be fine.
She turned on her heel and marched toward it, and I had no choice but to follow. I shut the door behind me. What's up?
Nothing. Is what? This investigation is going nowhere, and I've been told to wrap it up. There's a whole list of more important crimes lined up, and my boss thinks this is a waste of time. I can't say that I blame him. A lot of crime happens in that neighborhood. We can't follow up on everything. Don't hold that against us.
I don't. I know it's a problem. Too few cops, too much ground to cover, too much violence. No money to hire more cops. You have to pick and choose.
You got it.
I wondered if this was just a courtesy call, or if she was trying to send me a message. You know, we still own that property, at least at the moment. Now that our title has been established, we can't just walk away. I carefully left aside that someone had died in front of that property, in front of me.
Join the club. Let your lawyer take care of it and dump it as fast as you can.
Was that bitterness I was hearing? That has been my plan so far, but the more I think about it, the more I wonder if there's anything the Society can do.
Oh, jeez. You're not going to stick yourself in the middle of another mess, are you?
I don't plan to. Look, until this week I never paid any attention to the housing and property issues in the city, even though maybe I should have since I've worked in the city for years. And now I'm horrified. When Horifinac started to protest, I raised a hand to stop her. Yes, I know, typical liberal white guilt. But I can't just crawl back into my nice, safe, elitist hole here and ignore it now.
You want to join the force?
Was that actually humor from the detective? No, not exactly. But if there are agencies or groups who are trying to reclaim their neighborhoods, the Society can help by giving them the history of the way things were when those neighborhoods were thriving. Pictures, letters, newspaper clippings, the kind of stuff that makes a place seem real to other people. And all they see now is a gang battle zone. Detective Horifinac sat back in her chair and studied my face.
Now, you are a piece of work. Somebody tries to kill you, and you turn it into a do-gooder opportunity.
Is that wrong? I challenged her. She slumped.
No, I guess not. As long as you do it from your nice, safe building here. Don't go wandering around drug turf.
Believe me, I won't. The history is here in this building. Look, do you mind if I get in touch with Tyrone? Might as well start with his group, his neighborhood, our neighborhood.
I guess. You know any local journalists?
I can probably find some. I know there are a few who come in now and then to go through our archives looking for pictures.
Why? Get one on your side. Get them interested. No offense, but anything that comes out of this place isn't going to attract a big audience, and you don't have a heck of a lot of members. Now, a smart guy with a local paper, or even a blog, will reach more people.
I see your point. We need a voice that people will listen to.
Exactly. Just don't stir up any trouble while you're at it. Don't pick a hothead who wants to make a name for himself.
I understand, Detective Meredith. I will look into it.
but I still want to start with Tyrone. He's out of the hospital, I assume?
Yeah, since yesterday.
You have an address for him? Home? Office?
Hrivenek reached into her pocket, pulled out a card, and scribbled something on the back, then handed it to me.
Here.
Thanks. Before you go, did you do any background on him before your boss shut you down?
Some. Local boy makes good, born in North Philly, and dragged himself up and out. Still knows some people there. Good community organizer.
Any of those people hold a grudge against him? That he got out when they didn't?
We never got that far. Don't you go looking.
Detective, I doubt that anyone in that neighborhood would talk to me. I certainly didn't feel like attracting any more gunfire.
You got that right. We good?
I hope so. I promise I will do my best to stay out of trouble, and I don't plan to go anywhere near that neighborhood again.
Amen.
The detective stood up.
Well, that's all I wanted to say. Good luck with your project.
I thought she sounded skeptical. You don't think it can help?
People have tried before. You might as well give it a shot.
That was probably as close to her blessing as I was going to get. I escorted her out of the building and went up to my office to eat my sandwich and think. As I passed his desk, Eric said,
"We've got RSVPs from 3 board members and no's from 2. Is that about normal?"
"Probably. We need a quorum to vote Elliot in, but apart from that, there are no big issues on the table. Unless I got this neighborhoods project whipped together by next week, but that was unlikely, and I didn't want to rush it and blow my chances. I'm going to eat my lunch now. I think I'll get some coffee first. You want anything?"
"No, ma'am. I'm good. Thanks."
Still restless, I wandered down the hall to the staff room. There I found LaToya helping herself to coffee. She was the only one there, since it was still early for lunch. "LaToya, you knew Tyrone. Can you tell me anything more about his background? Education, experience, that kind of thing? I'd like to talk to him about this neighborhoods project, but I don't know much about the community development organizations around the city. Is he effective at what he does, or haven't you kept up with his activities?" LaToya looked surprisingly uncertain, and I wondered if she had something to say. Finally, she said, "Come to my office." I followed her down the hall, and we turned right before we reached my end. I didn't want to jump to any conclusions. Was she being private, or did she have something on Tyrone? When we reached her office, she set down her coffee and gestured at a chair.
"Please, sit."
"Is there a problem?" I asked cautiously.
LaToya appeared startled.
"What?"
"Oh, no. I just don't like to broadcast my personal business to the entire staff. But in this case, you have a legitimate reason for asking. I didn't grow up around here. I was raised outside of Pittsburgh and came to Philadelphia for college. I liked the area, so I stayed on and got a master's degree. Tyrone was a couple of years ahead of me at Penn, but he was, how should I put this, a high-profile figure on campus, even then?
Was that good or bad?"
"Good, in general. He was an activist, but not an angry one, if that makes sense to you. He had his causes, and he worked hard to bring attention to them. Saving his old neighborhood was one of those causes, even then, and apparently the one that stuck. He made it out that he felt he owed the place something."
"Does he do it professionally now? I mean, how does he support himself?
A non-profit in that part of town can't pay much, if anything."
"You're getting ahead of my story, Nell,"
LaToya chided.
I shut up. I wanted her to keep talking. "As you might guess, Tyrone was charismatic, charming, interesting. He came from a world that I knew nothing about. He could have downplayed his origins, but he chose not to. As I think I told you, he doesn't do this for egotistical purposes. He's a true believer. In any case, we kept crossing paths, and eventually we started seeing each other."
I could easily visualize that. Cool, reserved LaToya and outgoing, rapid-fire Tyrone. They would have been a complimentary pairing.
"But it didn't last?" I prompted. "No, but we parted as friends. I'm not sure I've seen him in the past 5 years. We run in different circles, I guess you'd say. It was something of a shock when someone shot at him this week. I'd heard nothing but positive things about his activities."
"I don't mean to pry, but you can understand my curiosity. I'd still like to know if he might have been the target of the shooting. From what you've said, it doesn't sound like it, but he could have changed since you knew him well."
Can you tell me anything about his personal life? Partner? Kids? Where he lives?
I know only a few details. I believe he's married to a woman he met when the city issued municipal bonds to support the vacant property initiative a few years ago. I think she's a banker, but I've never met her. I wouldn't know about children. As for where he lives, I have no information.
Wait a sec, I said, and pulled the detective's card out of my pocket. Here's his address. I handed it to her across the desk. She read it and nodded as though it meant something to her.
Do you know that area? She asked.
When I shook my head, she said,
It's what I'd call a compromise neighborhood, on the brink of gentrification. Safe, with some nice older homes, if you're willing to put a little effort and money into them. His professional wife would have no reason to apologize for the address, but Tyrone wouldn't have to feel defensive of turning his back on his origins, if that seems logical to you.
I think it does. That's an interesting comment. At least he hasn't moved out to the suburbs. So it's his wife's income that supports them?
That would be my guess, although I have no direct knowledge.
LaToya was always careful about accuracy.
Is that of any help to you?
To be honest, yes and no. What you're telling me is that there is no obvious reason, that you know of, why anyone would take a pot shot at him when he's in his childhood neighborhood, which he is still trying to help.
LaToya nodded. Yes, I think it's fair to say that. Are you still clinging to the belief that it was not a random drive-by shooting?
I'm trying, but so far I'm not finding much support for that idea. Still, it just doesn't feel right.
Don't make it too personal, Nell. The shooting is just a reflection of the kind of neighborhood that it's become.
I know. I understand. I just don't like it. I stood up. Thanks for filling me in. If I should happen to see Tyrone again, should I mention you, or would you rather I didn't?
If I come up, fine.
Back in my office with my coffee, I finally had a chance to eat my sandwich. The random drive-by theory was looking better and better. Still, I felt compelled to talk with Tyrone again. We might not have any answers to the shooting between us, but his neighborhood could be the subject of the society's first neighborhood profile, with his help and that of his organization. It could serve as a model for any others, and he could help me shape the plan.
Chapter 16. I finished my sandwich, then reached for the phone. I should strike while the iron was hot, which translated to, find out now whether this idea has any chance of working, sooner rather than later, before I and other people devoted a lot of time to it. Speaking with Tyrone was a good place to start, if he was up to it. After all, he'd been shot just this week, and couldn't possibly be fully recovered. I had never wanted to find out how many times or where he'd been hit, but at least I knew he had been alert and talking to me earlier in the week. If he was home recuperating, I could see him there, if he didn't object. If he didn't feel he could handle it, I'd just have to wait. As I told my staff, there was no deadline for my idea. The city wasn't going to change quickly, and its problems were not going to go away. Before I could change my mind, I called the number that the detective had scribbled on the card. On the third ring, a man answered. Tyrone, is that you? I asked.
Yeah? Who's this?
It's Nell Pratt. From Monday?
Wow, that sounded dumb. Oh, Nell, I didn't recognize your voice. How you doing?
I'm fine. I'm more worried about you. You got out of the hospital yesterday?
Yeah, they let me out. I'm okay, but they gave me a list of stuff I'm not supposed to do, and most everything I want to do is on it.
Is anyone there to take care of you?
No. But I don't need help to just sit and stare at the television. I tried reading, but I kept falling asleep, and then I had to read the same page over again. Did you need something?
It's not urgent, but this whole episode got me thinking that maybe the society hasn't done enough to, well, represent the whole of the city, including the run-down parts.
You've seen it,
he said bitterly.
What's to represent?
Maybe he had a right to be bitter. He'd been trying to do something good, and he'd gotten shot for his efforts. What the neighborhoods used to be, not what they are now. A moment of silence.
Go on.
Tyrone finally said. I was thinking about whether the society could put together some neighborhood profiles
that groups like yours could use to promote your vision of redevelopment? Using old pictures and stories, advertising, things like that, from our collections.
When Tyrone spoke again, his tone was warmer.
I like it. You thinking of starting with North Philly?
Well, since we've got the public's attention, for about a minute at least, it seems like a good place to start. When you're feeling up to it, can we get together and talk about it?
You free now? Because I'm going crazy sitting here staring at the walls.
Only if you're feeling strong enough.
Don't worry about me. I've survived worse. You know where I live?
The detective told me. You really want me to come over now?
Yes. My last painkillers have just kicked in, and they'll last maybe 4 hours tops, and then I'll fall asleep. Now's good.
Then I'll be there. It occurred to me that it might be a good idea to call James, since I assumed he expected to give me a ride home, and I wasn't sure where I'd be at quitting time. As near as I could tell, Tyrone lived in a neighborhood not far from the art museum, but I didn't know the streets there well. I called James's office number.
Morrison,
he said absently. Pratt, I shot back.
Oh, hi, Nell. I wasn't expecting you to call. Problem?
No, I wanted to let you know that I'm going to go over to Tyrone Blakeney's home to talk to him about his neighborhood project. My statement resulted in a long silence from him.
You sure that's a good idea? Where does he live?
I told him the address. That's safe enough, don't you think?
I suppose. You want me to pick you up there?
I'm not sure how long I'll be there. I wanted to get things started, but he's just out of the hospital and on medication, so he may fade quickly. Why don't I call you when I know my plans?
All right. Later, then. Take care.
He hung up. All business. I felt vaguely dissatisfied. In effect, I had dutifully asked James's permission to go to this place, and he had grudgingly said yes. I resented having had to ask, although given that there was a crime involved and no one was sure whether Tyrone had been the target, there might be some risk attached. But how could I go on with my life looking over my shoulder all the time? I thought it would pass, but how long would that take? I gathered up my things and told Eric, I'm going to go talk to Tyrone Blakeney now.
Isn't he the man?
Eric asked anxiously. Yes, he's the one. He's out of the hospital and home now, and I wanted to discuss what the society might be able to do to help him and his organization. I don't know how long I'll be gone because I don't know how much he can take, so I may or may not be back before the end of the day. Oh, and I've alerted the FBI of my whereabouts, so they shouldn't be calling. Eric suppressed a smile.
Got it, ma'am. Be safe.
I went downstairs, then walked over to Broad Street to catch a cab at the hotel there. Tyrone's address was too far away to walk and too short a distance to take the subway, so a cab it was. It took only 15 minutes to arrive at his home. It was, as LaToya had suggested, a pleasant neighborhood. Shabby, but not grubby. The houses looked well cared for, and the streets were clean and free of trash. Tyrone's door had a shiny brass knocker, which I used, and then I heard him call out,
"Door's open."
It said something about a neighborhood when you could leave your door unlocked. I let myself in. "Tyrone, it's Nell Pratt," I called out once I was inside.
"Here,"
he answered. I followed his voice to the living room on the right. "You're looking better than the last time I saw you," I told him, "and I'm not just saying that to be polite. How are you feeling?"
"Grateful, I guess. None of the bullets hit anything that mattered. It looked a lot worse than it was."
There had been a lot of blood. I quashed that memory quickly. It did look bad, not that I have a lot of experience in that area. "I'm sorry about Charisse. She seemed really invested in what she was doing."
"She was. She was making a difference. So, I'd offer you something to drink, but that would mean I'd have to get up."
I waved off his offer. "Don't worry about that. I didn't come all the way over here for a cup of tea. You want me to jump right in?"
"Please, have a seat."
I sat. "After seeing that neighborhood with you and realizing we, by that I mean the society, have a stake in the place, I started wondering if there was something proactive we could do to help local efforts to clean up the neighborhoods and maybe make them viable again." I went on to tell him the thoughts I had had so far, explain what we had in our collections that might be useful, and mentioned that I'd asked my staff to look for materials that were relevant. Tyrone listened without comment until I was finished. "Well?"
"I think it's great," You know, neighborhood organizations get kind of caught up in what they're doing in the moment, without ever seeing a bigger picture. Mostly they're struggling to survive, so you can't blame them. But what you're suggesting could broaden our reach and put things in perspective for the public. Especially since, like you said, nobody remembers the way it was. People need to be reminded.
I'm glad you feel that way. I don't know what I can promise, because I'm not the person in charge of managing projects like this, and we don't do exhibits anymore. But I think I can sell it to the board and the staff, as long as none of our other programs suffer. Listen, one thing I was wondering, do you have any journalists, in print or online, on your side? We could use some public outreach, and the society has kind of a limited appeal. I don't think our newsletter would reach the people you need.
Let me think on it. I might have some ideas. I should be back at work by next week, and I can ask around. But I like the way you're thinking.
Well, being shot at was a wake-up call, and I want to make it matter. I don't think I've met your wife. I understand she's in banking?
Investment banking. You know, bonds and stuff.
Do you think her company would have any information in their files? Demographics and that sort of thing? I understand that she was involved in the Mayor's Initiative a few years back.
Yes, she was. That bond issue raised a lot of money. Most of it's been spent, but it hasn't been wasted, which is more than you can say for a lot of city funds. That's how we met, across the table.
So you've been doing this for a while. How would you grade your efforts?
A solid B, maybe. There's a lot that needs to be done, and it won't happen quickly. But we need people who can stay the course, like me.
He hadn't complained, but I thought Tyrone looked tired. Well, that's all I had to say. Nothing works fast at our place either, but I wanted to know that you thought it was a good idea before I took it any further. I'm still thinking it through and getting a handle on what resources we have.
Now, I truly appreciate what you're trying to do, after what happened. Most people would want to put it behind them.
Well, maybe this is my way of working through it. I stood up. Look, I'll let you get some rest now. We can talk next week, all right?
Great, and thanks again. You can see yourself out, right?
Sure, no problem. Outside on the pavement, I checked my watch. Close to 4 o'clock. What was I supposed to do with an empty hour? I decided to walk. I did need the exercise, and the fresh air, and the time to sort out my thoughts. I might as well head over to FBI headquarters and meet James there. If he was still busy, I could find myself a cup of coffee and sit and contemplate Independence Hall or the Liberty Bell. I could even shop at the stores of the gallery along the way. I seemed to recall that it had been the result of an earlier city redevelopment project, and it had changed the face of Market Street in Center City. Or I could stop at the Reading Terminal Market, one of my all-time favorite places in Philadelphia, and pick up some stuff for dinner, since I knew I had a ride home. I tended to overshop when I was in that place, which made it hard to haul everything back on the train. Come to think of it, the whole convention center complex had been another public project, although the city had created a separate authority to manage the financing. Mitchell Wakeman, whose largesse was supporting the renovations at the society, after I'd cleared the way for his favorite construction project in Chester County, had played a major part in that project. All in all, the buildings along Market Street demonstrated that a mix of public and private financing could make a real difference in a city. Now I needed to convince the citizens that the neighborhoods were worth investing in as well. It was a fairly long walk, but I found myself pleasantly tired by the time I arrived at the market. I allowed myself some time to ramble through the crowded aisles, admiring the rich variety of vegetables and fruits and fish and meat and so much more, trying to decide what I was in the mood for. I smiled at the young Amish women in traditional caps behind the counters. I ogled the absurd chocolate figures, really, noses, before I looped back to the vegetable corner and stocked up on glorious clusters of fresh mushrooms and herbs and staples. Halfway through, I called James. "Hey there," I greeted him.
"You ready to go home?"
"Not yet. I'm at the Reading Terminal and I wondered if there was anything in particular you wanted to eat. Meat? Fish?"
"Get some of everything,"
he said, and I could hear the smile in his voice. My exact idea. "I should be over at your place in about 15 minutes if you want to meet out front."
"See you then."
When we had hung up, I went back in search of dinner. And dessert. Life was looking up. Chapter 17.
I found myself a seat on a bench in front of the building that housed FBI headquarters, overlooking Independence Mall, and arrayed my bag.